Hey, I've got some exciting news for you. For nearly a decade, the Social Media Marketing Society has been helping marketers like you to keep up with the changing times. This is our private community just for marketers, and the doors are open right now. When you join, you get access to ongoing training and become part of a welcoming community of marketers who are just like you. Learn more at smmarketingsociety.com. Again, smmarketingsociety.com.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by socialmediaexaminer.com. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know what works with social media. I'm super excited about today's show. I'm going to be joined by Ginny Dietrich, and we'll explore how to plan for an inevitable crisis that you will be facing in your business, regardless of what size business you have. Now, I just want to really encourage you in the latter half of this podcast, after we talk about a lot of the questions that I have, we dig into a lot of what you could do to build a crisis plan. And I really think you're going to want to pay attention to this podcast episode. By the way, if you want to reach me, email podcast@socialmediaexaminer.com. And for those of you that are regular listeners, you may have noticed that I did not say my hello at the beginning. Wondering why? Got a bit of a sore throat, and it's hard to say that quickly and make it sound good. So I just decided to skip it. So if you thought something was different, that's what it was. All right, let's now transition to this week's brand new discovery.
Helping you stay alive in the social jungle, here is this week's survival tip.
Today, I'm joined by Eric Fisher with a brand new discovery. What'd you find, Eric?
I found a cool online tool that lets you see the way that you've got your marketing set up across all your different social sites all in one glance.
Tell me more.
So this is basically a macro level tool. It's called Lately. And what this does is you go to their site at trylately.com and you enter in your website and your email, and then it will scan your URL. And then what it does after that is it brings up all your different social sites. It goes out there and it finds your Twitter, your Pinterest, your Facebook, your Instagram, et cetera. And it shows you what you've got filled in on the bio there, as well as your naming scheme. So for example, we are SM Examiner on most everything.
Right.
And then it'll bring up the avatars or profile pics, et cetera, that you've got for all those accounts. And it will grade you on the consistency of your messaging, your naming, your imagery, et cetera, and show you, oh, you know what? We've got a bio in our Facebook that's way different than the one on our Twitter. And it gives you a macro level report that allows you to get everything back in line with consistency in your messaging.
Huh. So have you tried this?
I did. So I plugged in socialmediaexaminer.com and it brought up a good, I think it was like an 80 something. And I found, oh, you know what? We should probably tweak that bio here or there. But for the most part, we were consistent across the board, except for where like our cover image was social media marketing world instead of, social media examiner with good reason.
So what's the cost on this?
This is a free tool. Like this is literally one of those things where you go try it out and it's free. It's one of those things where there's pricing down the line later if you want to do some small business or nonprofit type products, locations, audiences, connecting different accounts and things like that. But this is a free tool.
So, I see. So basically you have to scroll down a little bit to actually see how it works for free. And because if you go to the website and you click on pricing, you could be a little shocked because it's not inexpensive. Right. It looks like it starts at $229 a month. But if you scroll down and you just put in your website and your URL and your email address and scan your URL for free, that is the free something that you will get from it. Do you feel like that free something you get is sufficient enough that it's worth it and they're not going to, get, if you will, people contacting them trying to upsell them?
No, I got an email that said, hey, thanks for trying us out. And thanks. You know, here's the link to your report so you can go back to it at any time.
Right.
But other than that, and honestly, I think the value here is how long has it been since you've really looked at your, you know, portfolio of social channels closely enough for consistency?
Right. Okay, cool. Thank you so much, Eric.
You're welcome.
Earlier in today's show, I mentioned the Social Media Marketing Society. When you join this exclusive community, you get access to marketing training covering everything from artificial intelligence all the way to YouTube. You see what I did? A to Y, all the way across the spectrum. Every month, we add fresh new training workshops on the latest marketing strategies. Join more than 1,000 marketers who are thriving because of the society. Here's what a fellow marketer had to say. Quote, I've been so impressed with the content of the society. It's the deep dive I was wanting. Really glad I joined, unquote, said Dina Childs. Join today by visiting smmarketingsociety.com. Again, smmarketingsociety.com.
And now for this week's interview with Ginny Dietrich.
Helping you to simplify your social safari. Here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I'm excited to be joined by Ginny Dietrich. If you don't know who Ginny is, she is a crisis management pro. She's the founder and CEO of SpinSucks.com, a site that helps businesses thrive with their public online communications. And she's got a brand new podcast called, guess what? Spin Sucks. Ginny, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here, Mike.
Welcome back. It's been a long time, like 4 years.
I know. I think we decided 4 years.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I can't even believe I've been doing it that long. So today you and I are going to explore when and how a business should respond publicly to a crisis, whether that happens inside the company or whether that happens outside the company. And this is something I think that happens a lot and we don't talk about a lot. So I thought you'd be the perfect person to bring on. First question is, why is it that nowadays it seems like they're in the media and in social media, there's like a crisis happening constantly? What's going on?
Almost every day.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about this a lot about how, you know, it used to be that there were very specific PR agencies focused on crisis communications and that's all they did. But they were able to specialize in it because the crises were so few and far between. And today, you know, somebody can be upset with a flight that they were on or a hotel stay or that your crackpot killed a fictional TV character and take to Twitter or Facebook or any social network and it just blows completely out of proportion. So that's really what we're looking at today is everybody has a megaphone because of social media. And, it used to be that if you were upset with somebody or something, you would tell your neighbor, you would tell your friends, you would tell your family, but it was contained to maybe 30 people. And today you can be upset about something and get it out to hundreds of thousands of people.
And it's kind of a fascinating dilemma from the business perspective, right? Because we have all these tools that allow us to kind of monitor things like sentiment and what people are saying about us. And then we also have the ability for someone to tag us or easily share information with us. And it seems like the right person saying the wrong thing, you know, to their audience can just pop and all of a sudden create a nutso story where someone else saying the exact same thing may not have that kind of a situation. So, you know, that's like a great transition to my next question, which is that we could be in this sky is falling mentality, right? Where every little negative thing that's said about us creates a crisis, right? So how do we discern? How do we know, you know, what to worry about and what not to worry about?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's certainly different levels. And one of the things we talk about is an issue versus a crisis. And an issue really is, you know, is this something that is, I hate to say this, but troll enforced? Is it somebody who's just, you know, antagonizing you or pushing your buttons, but isn't really going to go anywhere? And if that's the case, then that's one approach. Is it something that, you know, it's pretty bad, but it's going to blow over in the 24/7 news cycle and won't be a big deal. But you really want to focus that on, is it going to lose us reputation? Is it going to lose us money? And if the answer to either of those questions is yes, then it becomes a crisis. So most of what we see, especially on social media, is an issue. It's never going to cause stock price decline or a loss of customers, a loss of revenue, or a loss of reputation. It may be really painful for a day or two, or maybe even a week, but it's not going to cause any of those things. So as long as it doesn't cause reputation or money loss, you really can categorize it in an issue. Once it starts to cause reputation or money loss, then it becomes an actual crisis, and that's a different level. So when you think about how you approach things, you know, from the troll induced to all the way up to a reputation or money loss, you have different levels. So you could say the troll is a level one and the money loss or reputation loss is a level 10. And how do you respond to each level in between?
Got it. So something like Cambridge Analytica for Facebook would be a level 10 for sure, right?
I don't even know that it would be a level 10.
Only because the whole world is talking about it and it's not going away.
The whole world is talking about it.
And it is impacting the stock price, right? I mean, it is.
But after he testified before Congress, stock prices went up. So when you think about it from that perspective, has it hurt their reputation? I think they took a little reputational hit, but if I were working on that, I probably would have categorized it at an 8 or a 9.
Okay,
but the fact that, you know, stock prices are increasing and they're not losing money and that kind of stuff doesn't really put it at a 10.
Right. But prior to all his testimony, it might have been a little higher, right? I mean, obviously.
Oh, yeah, for
obviously
sure.
And that's handled it really well, right? Because
they handled it so well.
But at the front end of it, it was definitely a crisis, unquestionably, right?
You know. Yeah, and I think it still is a crisis. I just don't think we've already seen that it hasn't cost them any money. I do think they've taken a reputational hit.
Right.
But it's also hard because we're in that marketing bubble where, you know, we're completely obsessed about it.
Exactly.
And paying attention and all of that. So it may look like a reputational hit to us, but not necessarily to the outside world.
Okay, so let's zoom in on this issue thing a little bit. So a troll versus a will it blow over, how do we handle that kind of stuff?
You know, it's funny, and I keep thinking about this. Jay Baron and Mitch Joel had this conversation in a Facebook group the other day about whether or not to respond to trolls. And the context that was they were talking about in relation to reviews on your books. So on Amazon, when people leave a review, do you respond to the really negative one-star reviews or do you let it go? And Mitch Joel's response was, well, I wrote the book and it's kind of like art or music. It's not for everybody. And I figure that there are people that agree and don't agree. And Jay Baer's perspective, of course, hug your haters, is actually you should respond to them because you're hugging your haters and you're, you know, giving them, you're making them feel warm and fuzzy. I'm more on the Jay Baer side from a crisis perspective, because while you're not necessarily going to change the mind of the troll or the negative reviewer or the person who's upset with you, the other people who see your response are going to be incentivized by that. So with the ability for people to leave negative things online anywhere, anytime, it's in how you respond that sort of mitigates that. So we always say, leave a really professional, non-emotional response one time. If the troll comes back, you can certainly say, I'd love to have this conversation with you offline. Let's connect via phone or email,
right,
or text, wherever. But do not continue the conversation. So respond once. If they keep coming back, just ignore them. And you're really doing that so that anybody else who reads that negative review sees that you've addressed it and tried to be professional and sane about it.
Now, I will tell you that I have had my fair share of trolls. And a true troll versus a hater is a very different animal.
Yes.
And when you have someone who's just got an outright vendetta against your company and they're going to do everything in their power to just smear you everywhere with the hope that it's going to hurt your reputation, you got to somehow address that at some point, right? Because then it becomes a bigger issue, right?
It is. And, you know, it's really about you addressing that person by being professional and sane and kind and saying, you know, hey, this is what's going on. And really, it's not, you're not going to change that person's mind, and they may continue to come back at you. It's really about letting the rest of the world see that you're the one that's right. rational about it, not this other person.
Perfect. Now, to the other thing, which is, it will it blow over? How do you discern that, right? Because some stuff escalates and doesn't blow over. So how do we know, quote sure. unquote, whether to address an issue that's not from a troll and that may or may not blow over? What do we do in that situation?
So when you're thinking about your crisis communication planning, what you want to do is really look at every scenario. And you want to say, you want to sit in a room for at least 2 hours with, you know, a handful of people, and they're going to represent different parts of the company. And you're going to say, let's think of every single scenario that could affect us. And it's everything from a troll or a hater to, you know, I was terrible and stole money from the company and I'm going to jail. I mean, it can be, and everything in between. And it can be natural disasters. It could be, you know, employee shootings. It could, like, you think about everything. And then you start to bucket them out and say, okay, let's say that there is a hater and they really hate what we have to say and do. And they're going to do everything that they can to bring us down. Well, now they've started to that, and we've responded to that, but that's a level one. Well, now what they've started to do is get people, other people involved. And so now instead of one, you have five. So maybe that's a level two. Well, now that's starting to grow and there's 10 or there's 50 or there's 100. Now you're going from a level one to maybe a level six or seven. And how do you respond to that? So it's really about the planning process and figuring out, okay, is it one person? Is it a handful of people? Is it the gross minority who is very vocal? You have to figure out those pieces of it and plan accordingly to that.
Well, I'll just share a little story that I know you know about, but not everybody listening knows about. We had a, back in the early days at Social Media Marketing World, we had a song, which I will not name. and we posted it up on YouTube, and it got picked up by Gawker. And yep. And Gawker wrote this really, really negative review on this. And then all of a sudden, this thing was trending in the top 10 on YouTube for all the wrong reasons. And right. then all of a sudden, we were on VH1 and yep. like all this craziness. And the media was reaching out wanting to talk to the employee who was part of this thing. Now, here's the thing. It only captured what was happening on the stage. It didn't capture what the audience's reaction was. It had no context. So right. so it looked like it was something different than what it was. And after a lot of internal communications and talking to you, we decided that this is a great example of something we're just going to let ride. And we're yep. not going to publicly talk about this at all, because it was more of people making fun of a piece of content that we produced. We chose not to remove the content because at that point, you know, people were already making cover art off of, I mean, cover album stuff off of it
right,
and stuff.
Right.
But eventually, we were, after the thing had millions of views years later, we were able to exercise our rights to the copyright on that and remove all the illegal versions of this video everywhere on the internet. And then we were able to keep our copy private. And then we could prove to all these other entities that we own the exclusive rights to this video. And this thing eventually just died. You know, because it was one of those kind of things that kind of made a mockery of us and the people on the stage. But we just decided we're not going to let anybody in this company make any public statements and talk to anybody. We're not going to license out the use of this video. And it did create a lot of PR. Even this year, people are still trying to steal that video and republish it. But you know, we just chose in this case to just let it ride, because it was just people finding something that we thought was entertaining to be ridiculous, and we just let it roll, and it didn't seem to hurt us at all. And that's an example of one where we just knew that if we talked about it, it was just going to make it worse.
Right. And that's when we talked about it, and when I talked with your employee about it, that's what we talked about, is, okay, is this going to hurt your reputation? No. And is it are the people who are glomming onto this potential society members, event attendees.
No, you know, they weren't.
Is it going to? And yeah. They weren't. It was the outside world who's glomming on for
Here's
no
what's
real
wrong
reason
with social media marketers. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So that's what we talked about. And so because of that, we were able to say, okay, here's based on all of these things, and the answer to the reputational and the money loss questions was no and no. Right. So what do you want to do? And what we decided is if you contributed to that conversation, it was going to continue. Right. So there was really no reason to do that. And it wasn't everybody who is
it was subjective because it was entertainment.
A customer of you is supportive of you. So it didn't make any sense to add any fuel to that fire.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Now, so we've been talking, we're going to get into more planned stuff if we have time a little later in this dialogue. But, you know, most of the stuff we've been talking about has to do with like stuff that happens outside the company, meaning customers, right. Trolls, yep. Haters. What about when we have something going on inside the company? When should a problem internally be discussed publicly? And I would imagine you could probably give some examples better than I could. But there are things that go down inside the company. Maybe you have an employee who publicly did something, you know, and mm-hmm. everybody's mm-hmm. affiliating them with the company, or maybe there's some serious financial problems, or maybe you're mm-hmm. about to go bankrupt. I don't know. I mean, when do you decide to take these internal matters that are happening with people inside the company public, or when do you keep them internal?
I mean, it depends on how transparent you are with your organization. It, you know, Buffer is really well known for literally opening up their doors and windows and letting everybody see everything. So for them, I would say that probably, you know, if you're about to go bankrupt or there's financial issues or something like that, it's probably something you should disclose because that's how you're running your business.
Right.
For the rest of us, you know, I hate this answer, but it depends. I'll give you a really good example. We had an employee who was accused of plagiarizing somebody else's content. And I went to the employee and I said, this has come across my desk and I'd like to hear your side of the story. And she swore up and down that she hadn't plagiarized it. It just happened to be coincidence. The two articles were pretty close, but it wasn't like it was copied and pasted. I mean, it was pretty close, but from comparing them side by side, it didn't look like it had been plagiarized. And they had run about 3 days apart. So this other piece had run 3 days previously. And I mean, I supported her. I stood up for her. I went back to the guy who said that she had plagiarized. And I said, look, I've done this. I've compared the two. I'm really sorry, but I just don't see it. And about 2 months later, I just happened to see something come across our Google Drive. And it was the article that she had written in draft form. And it was the same day and it was a copy and paste. And then she had gone in and changed words around so that it didn't look like it had been plagiarized.
Oh.
And yeah, like it's one of those things where you're like, wow, I believed you and I supported you. And like, I even went back to this guy and I mean, I got the attorney involved in everything so that he couldn't come down on us. And so two things happened. Well, this is what we decided to do. I went back to him and I apologized. And of course I had to get, you know, the attorney's approval on all of that because of liability and all of that. And I just said, I'm so sorry. Of course, as a leader, you want to support your team, but here's what's happening. She's being let go, you know, and I went through all of that. And then I decided to make it public. And I created sort of a case study, for lack of a better term, on the blog to talk about, this is what happened. Here's how it came about. And then I accidentally saw this and we discovered that it was in fact plagiarized.
Did you want to get out in front of it just in case? Is that why you did that?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it was a non-thing. I mean, it was a non-starter. It just completely went away.
All right. What do you do? You know how there's trends that come and go that are hot button issues? Like, for example, the Dukes of Hazzard car, you know what I mean? With the stuff on top of it, or, you know, the Me Too movement and all these kind of things that are highly, highly sensitive, big, you know, rights-based movement stuff. What happens when you have an employee that publicly comes out in opposition to some of those kind of things? And then all of a sudden that movement targets your business, because I can imagine this stuff happens, and maybe on a smaller scale all the time, where like someone will say, hey, one of your employees believes in this. And if your employee believes in this, it means you and your company believes in this. And it means we're going to boycott your company. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about that happens sometimes, right? So yes. Like, how do we deal with that kind of stuff? Because that has to do with an internal person, an employee taking a stance on something that could bring heat to the company.
And this is, again, it depends situation, but I will tell you that if an employee is using their personal page to all or personal social network, for instance, to also talk about the company, then they've crossed a line from the personal to the professional and vice versa. So you kind of have to be careful with, you know, freedom of speech and all the things wrapped into it. And you can't fire somebody for what they've posted on their social networks personally.
Right.
But when you start to cross those lines, that's when it becomes kind of blurry. And the very first step you want to take is have a conversation with the employee to say, look, you represent the company. And even though this was on your personal page, you also post about business stuff there. And so we have customers, we have clients who are friends with you on your page. And because of that, it looks like your opinion is representing the
company.
Fact of the company, the opinion of the company. So of course there's the whole, you know, what's ever tweeted or posted is not the opinion of my company. You can put that and you can insist that your team put that in their bios, so that you can separate the two. And, you know, most people are pretty reasonable when you have that conversation and you can say, you know, I'm not going to ask you to take this down, but here's the perception and here's what people are saying. And it doesn't represent the opinion of the company as a whole, because we tend to stay away from those, you know, political
issues.
Conversations or opposition or whatever. We stay away from that because we have customers or clients from around the globe who have different viewpoints and we want to be inclusive of them all. Typically, people are pretty receptive to that and will do what they think is the right thing. And, you know, if they want to have those conversations on their social networks, awesome. That's why there's privacy settings.
Okay, let's ratchet it up a little bit. Let's say someone in a leadership position in the company is arrested for, you know, public intoxication. You know, I mean, this stuff happens, you know. How in the world do you deal in that kind of situation, you know? Or you've got someone who's a thought leader, you know, that you're working with, and they do something really stupid, you know?
Yeah. Jeez. I mean, look, you know this happens, right?
I mean, this is not...
I know. That's why I'm laughing. You know, people are human. We make mistakes. And
right.
I think the way that we handle things in general... when we're not in a crisis is always helpful. So This is where we're going to cross over into reputation management a little bit, but this is where reputation management is helpful because, you know, in the example I used with the plagiarism, because we have such a good reputation and have such fierce, engaged, loyal brand ambassadors, they all came to our defense when I said, look, we made this mistake. And as the leader, I made a gigantic mistake. And I told this guy to bugger off because he was wrong and he wasn't wrong.
Right.
And that because we continue to work on our reputation and it's, you know, so important to us, we were able to sort of get over that. So, you know, if a leader is being arrested for public intoxication or a thought leader inside your company is in opposition to, I mean, we'll go with the example you use with Me Too, you know, whatever it happens to be, the fact that you continue to work on your reputation and you have a good reputation, people are really forgiving when you do make a mistake, because we make mistakes. We're human.
Right. Okay. Next question is, we've been talking a lot about transparency. You were a great example of it with the blog post that you did. You mentioned Buffer earlier. Many of the people listening work for companies, and the leaders of those companies, they probably would love them to be more transparent.
Sure.
So first question down this road is, how can we encourage our leaders to be more transparent? Any recommendations?
One of the very first things that we do when we start working with a new client where that's an issue is we encourage the executive, the CEO, to get out and walk around the business. So if it's, you know, manufacturing company, actually walk the manufacturing floor and talk to human beings. If you're in a virtual organization, pop into Zoom or Skype with somebody on your team once a week or once a day. If it's a retail location, going out and talking to employees that are on the floor, you know, like actually going out and talking to the human beings that you work with. What's funny about that is when you first start doing that, people freak out.
Oh yeah, they straighten up because here comes the boss, right?
Why is he here? What is she doing? Like, I actually love to do that to new employees. Where
do you recommend putting on a wig and a mustache?
That would be amazing. It's kind of like the what's the
undercover
show
boss?
Where they
yeah.
go behind the scenes.
Yeah, undercover boss, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that, but it's the same thing. It allows you to not only hear what challenges and issues that they're having, you know, in the tactical environment, but it makes you a much more transparent, approachable boss. And that's what you want. And, you know, I will say it's not an easy road. And typically it does take an outside counsel to get that done, because you can inside the organization can talk and talk and talk about it until you're blue in the face. But until somebody because people always like the experts better than whoever they have on their team, which is dumb, but that's how humans are. When you bring somebody in from the outside and that person or team says the same thing that you've been saying, all of a sudden, oh, okay. So it's not an easy road, but that's one of the very first things that you should do to make sure that they're they start to get to that transparency. It's having lunch and learns. It's one of the things we do with one of our biggest clients is that employees get to vote on 10 colleagues every quarter to have lunch with the CEO. And so he will show up at their location and have a lunch with these 10 employees, and they can talk about anything and everything. And again, in the beginning, it's really awkward and people don't want to say anything, and they don't know if the CEO is really open to hearing their challenges or issues or ideas, but then they start to get comfortable and it becomes kind of a thing, and they're really excited to be nominated to have lunch with him. I think we're like, this is the fifth year that we've been doing this, and people love it. It's a huge, huge honor to get nominated to have lunch with him. And they get to express their ideas and talk about some of the challenges that they have. And then he goes back and he fixes them. He figures out ways to fix them. So there are lots of things like that that you can do to get them on the road, on that road. And what you find along the way is that the transparency and the authenticity and all of that comes through in it.
So at a certain point, the hope is that by doing that, you're getting them more familiar with the true good, bad, and ugly of what's going on inside the company. Yes. So that they could talk publicly, right? And be somewhat transparent yes. publicly, because yes. like a good example of this is in my small company, which I'm the CEO of. I went live on January the 11th when the whole Facebook mm-hmm. algorithm changed, and I was very transparent and very much shared my concerns that this could be kind of the beginning of the end for exposure in the news feed, you know? And mm-hmm. I took a little bit of heat from some people saying that I was a fear monger, but the vast majority of the people actually really appreciated hearing from me because they respected the company, they respected me. And because I was so able so quickly to get out there and talk about my honest, true feelings of how I felt about this situation, it led to that video being watched almost 600,000 times and all sorts of press opportunities and stuff. So with transparency comes a little heat sometimes though, right? I mean, and we
sure,
have to be
absolutely.
Careful. Any advice to, and concern sometimes for the employees, right? Like, what's he going to say? Right? And we know this, like if you worked in the president's cabinet, right? You got to be concerned. Right.
That's a totally different.
But that's like the ultimate transparency. You know what I mean? So
the ultimate transparency at 5 o'clock in the morning tweeting.
Yeah. So like any wisdom on that front, as far as like, is it good? Is it better to be trained up on how to speak transparently to kind of build a better reputation and maybe get ahead of issues than to say nothing? Because in this era, it seems like that's rewarded, that transparency, that public transparency.
it is rewarded. And I would also argue that there's a difference between being transparent and going off the range. Like, I can't imagine that your colleagues, your employees would be freaked out about what you're going to say next, because you're not saying anything that's antagonistic, or, you know, you're not, that's not what you're doing. You're saying, oh my gosh,
right,
the Facebook algorithm has changed. Hey, guess what? We're social media Examiner, social media. we should comment on these things. So you're not going off the range. You're just being transparent about the fact that this could actually be a bigger deal than we think it might be. And for brands, this could hurt us pretty badly. So that there's a difference between that and, you know, like lambasting Facebook and saying delete Facebook and get off of it. You know, you're not going off the range,
right,
from that perspective.
And I probably could have never done that if I hadn't been practicing for a long time about being in public and talking about things transparently, you know what I mean? Because of the live show that I was doing. So I guess the message is that if you have a leader who is able to communicate and has an opinion that the audience will resonate with, right, then maybe it does make sense to encourage that person to begin dabbling in public commentary, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what makes great content, and that's what sets you apart from anybody else, because you have something unique to say that not everybody else is saying.
Okay. So I hinted a little earlier that I wanted to talk for a little bit about a crisis plan. So let's say that you have a legitimate problem that's either a serious issue, borderline crisis. Like, what are the steps that you would recommend people take to try to, you know, handle this? And I say this knowing every crisis is different and they all have different obvious, you know, tactical plans or whatever, but at a high level, what can we give our listeners as far as like how they could be prepared for some level of crisis?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that if you're in the middle of it, it's too late. It's too late, because what happens with human beings is we become emotional in the moment and we react and respond differently than we would if we had a plan. So the very, very, very best thing you can do is have a plan. And I always call it your insurance policy. As soon as you have one and you create your scenarios and you rehearse and you role play and you revisit it every quarter, you won't have a crisis. It'll just never happen, because that's Murphy's Law. So it's your insurance policy. The moment you don't have it and you don't know what to do, you either call a crisis firm and pay a gazillion dollars that you don't have, because that's the only way to manage it, or you flounder through it. Those are, I mean, not to work myself out of a job, but neither one of those are really a great option. So when you think about, and I encourage every single person, it doesn't matter if you're a solopreneur or you're an employee on a team of 50 marketers, every single listener should be focused on creating a crisis plan. And it used to be that we'd create these crisis plans and then they just go in the drawer and we'd revisit them, you know, maybe if you're lucky once a quarter, maybe once a year. Not so the case anymore. What you really want to do is sit in a room with a handful of people. And it could be, you know, if you're in a smaller business, you could bring in customers, you could bring in friends, you could bring in people you trust, advisors, mentors, whoever it could be. And then, of course, if you're in a bigger company, you want to bring in a smattering of people from different departments, because you want to have different ideas put on the table. And for at least 2 hours, brainstorm every single scenario that could possibly happen. And again, it's, you know, trolls are after you to drunken intoxication, public intoxication with the CEO to extramarital affairs. Like, you want to think about everything that you could possibly think. And luckily right now we have the opportunity to learn from others. So it could be, you know, this is us in Crockpot, where Crockpot is accused of killing a fictional TV character and Crockpot is put into crisis mode. It could be, you could create that scenario for yourself. It could be, you know, that you have to go testify before Congress because of something your company has done. Like, there are lots of things that you can put into those scenarios.
Right.
Once you've done that, divide them up into your levels. So what goes under level one, level two, and on up to 10. And then you want to say, okay, what will take this from level one to level two, and so on. So what escalates it? So you do all of that. And then you can, you know, let everybody go back to work. But as the marketer or the communicator, you want to spend your time, you want to build a dark website so that anything that could be answered in a crisis could be turned on a dime. So if something happens, you have a landing page or a microsite that you just hit publish on and it goes live so that people can get information. You want to include
now that could be like a blog. That could be a draft of a blog post in your existing site, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just something that you have in draft form that literally you just hit publish on and it goes live. You know, understand how Facebook Live works so that if you need to have your executives on video talking about things that are happening, you can do that really, really, really quickly. Have messaging already drafted and approved by the legal team so that you don't have to wait, you know, 6 hours or 24 hours for them to approve stuff.
Now, is this on every single one of these scenarios?
No, I would do it based on like what would generic? Become a crisis.
Okay.
Yeah, and it would be generic. So you would actually add in the details later, right. But you have all the generic stuff. You have the generic messaging, like, we're working on it. Here's right. when you can expect an update. This is what we're doing. Those kinds of messaging you can have ready to go. All of that you want to have ready.
We probably should mention that a crisis could just even be your website's offline completely, right? I mean, like, that's not an unusual circumstance where, like, you provide services online and all of a sudden none of your customers can get to your website for a day or two. You know what I mean? That's another example of a crisis, right?
But that's really real. I mean, how often do we go to Facebook to complain that Twitter's down?
Yeah.
And you can't go to Twitter to find out why they're down because Twitter's down. So yeah, same kind of thing. You want to have different areas where people can get information based on what it is. Once you have all of that, then you want to role play. And I think that's the most important part. And it also goes to the reputation management and the transparency in communication that we've been talking about, which is, okay, if this happens, let's actually conduct an interview. Let's actually pretend that we're an angry mob coming after you. Let's, you know, practice, rehearse, role play, because that's what's going to get you really prepared. And that's what will take the emotion out of it so that when you are in the middle of it, you're reacting based on your plan, not based on how you feel.
And I would imagine you probably should identify a few people in the company that will be the public face of the issue. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because not everybody is going to be able to get in front of the microphones and speak clearly, right?
No.
and be able to know when they're getting snuckered into a question, right?
Right.
Like all you got to do is watch these TV shows, right? Where they've got like... I watched this one with Kiefer Sutherland, you know, where he's the president and the press is always trying to ask him a question to kind of like snag him or whatever. You know what I mean? So you got to be smart enough or not smart enough, but you got to be discernible enough to know when that's not the question and when to you do all those kind of things. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when they ask a question to respond with, well, actually the bigger question is this, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, if you watched any of Zuckerberg's testimony, you saw him do some of that.
Exactly.
So they would ask a question that he didn't have an answer to or didn't know.
Yeah.
And he would either say, I'm going to talk to my team and get
back
to you.
Or I think what you're asking is this. Exactly.
Right.
It would change the question.
And then he
right?
would go back to his messaging. Yes.
He did pretty dang good, actually. I was impressed.
I know. Whoever he paid to coach him on that earned their money.
I think he's so non-emotional that it's. I saw a really cool graphic of Data from Star Trek, you know?
Right.
I don't know if you saw that with his head on it, you know? I was like, that's dead on, you know?
Totally
nothing
on.
Phases him.
That's exactly on.
So, okay. So we do some role playing and rehearsing and then what? I mean, how often do we do this? And, you know, once a quarter, once a year?
I would do it once a quarter.
Okay.
Yeah. And just, you know, you're not going to have to go through the big piece of it again, but just make sure that messaging is refreshed and updated. And I would definitely do the role playing because the role playing and the, you know, pretending that you're doing media interviews, that's beneficial even without a crisis. So it's beneficial if you're doing Facebook Live, if you're doing videos, if you're doing speaking engagements, that's beneficial across the board. So I would continue to do that.
Now, if you have a crisis plan and you realize it's escaping your control, at what point do you have to call in someone like you? I mean, is that about when, I mean, I would imagine having all this is going to be better than doing nothing. And you might start this out and realize you need to bring in some professional help. That probably happens a lot. Am I right?
It does happen quite a bit. It happened just on Friday. Yes.
So, you know, that's better than just being too late, right? I mean, like, that's the good news here, right?
Is that
if you can't just wait to hire someone like you after a few days of crisis. And some might argue that there was a few days where Facebook did not respond publicly at all to this Cambridge Analytica, and they took a lot of negative media heat on that, you know?
Yes, they did. Yep.
So in this case, they were clearly not prepared, you know, to deal with this.
They were not prepared.
In the beginning.
They definitely brought in some help. Yeah. And you can tell by the way he handled himself that he definitely had some coaching.
Awesome. Well, we could talk about this all day, but I know you talk about this on your podcast and on your website, and I know these are services that you provide to your clients. So I would love you to share where people can discover more about you and all the great things that you've got going on.
SpinSucks.com.
Awesome.
Everything is there.
And the podcast is there as well?
It is there, yes.
And if they want to search for it, it's two words, Spin Sucks, or one word, Spin Sucks, when it comes to the podcast?
Two words. I was trying to think how you would search it. Yeah, it's two words.
Two words. Awesome. All right, Jenny Dietrich, thank you so much for coming on and exploring this topic with me. I know it's a big topic, but I also know that if people listen to the last part of what we talked about, they're going to be at least more prepared for that inevitable day that they will be facing either an issue and or a crisis. So thanks for sharing your wisdom with us.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope you found a lot of value in today's podcast interview. If you want to take some notes and you didn't have time to, don't worry. We got it all taken care of for you. Simply visit socialmediaexaminer.com/302. Also, never miss a future episode of this podcast. Hit the subscribe button on your podcast player. This brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the absolute best out of your day, and may social media continue to change your world.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Hey, just a quick reminder, join the Social Media Marketing Society today and level up your marketing for your company or your clients. Visit smmarketingsociety.com to find out more.